here at the 2019 California Nevada Credit Union League's REACH Conference in beautiful Monterey, California. Can you believe this place, Jill?
It's beautiful.
That's awesome. It's beautiful. Awesome. And we are here with Jill Nowacki from Humanity.
That's right.
Your new gig.
My new
Congratulations
gig.
Again.
Thank you so,
so
much.
So neat. So how are things going? I just saw big news that you guys, what's the proper terminology? Did you acquire O'Rourke or partner with them? What's the proper terminology here?
We refer to it as a unique partnership in which O'Rourke is now a division of Humanity.
Okay.
So O'Rourke does our executive search side of the total human capital solutions we're offering.
And so that's brand new. I was going to say, hey, so how's it going?
But it's brand new. So Thursday, I think. It's just been a couple of days. But it is going well. Mm-hmm. So Humanity was founded with this goal to be the single greatest asset for talent in the credit union space. Mm-hmm. And obviously executive recruiting is a major part of talent. Mm-hmm. It's the attraction division of it. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have an opportunity to bring in a firm like O'Rourke that has 35 years of experience in the space and use some of the great tradition they have, but also to mix it up with some of the strategies and values that we think are necessary for today's workforce. Mm-hmm. It's a good chance to move forward. So we're excited.
Good move for you, for sure. All right. Talk to us about your presentation that you gave. Was it yesterday you gave it?
It was.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's basically balanced teams are better teams. And I kind of did the subhead here, 10 tiny conversations about inclusion in the workplace.
Yes.
So let's give a quick overview before we dive into some of the details here.
Absolutely. So something that I found is that I'm incredibly uncomfortable talking about gender and race at work.
Okay.
And so many other people are too. And so
pretty common.
So balanced teams are better teams takes that and breaks it into 10 little conversations where it's encouraging people to give consideration to why diversity and inclusion matters and to look at a few different key topics within that area and where it matters there. So with the 10 talks, I start off with the business case for it. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really get into what makes those balanced teams better. So it's increased innovation and creativity, increased profitability, better resonance with the target market if you actually have someone on your team who represents that target market.
Right. So the business case though, it's been proven time and time again that diverse groups, diverse workplaces, they work, but they work better.
Yes.
So what are some of so how do they work better? Is it just different perspectives coming into the room, or what's the science behind it?
The science behind it is probably something that I should explore a little bit further too.
Sorry,
That's great. I actually love that terminology of it. What has come to be seen with the idea of that inclusion allows people to share fully their ideas and perspectives. So how many times, and we talk about this a lot like in college classes, where somebody doesn't want to ask a question because they're afraid if they ask the question everybody will think they're dumb.
When in reality
everybody else in the class has the same question. If we have teams where people don't feel comfortable standing up and sharing their perspective or their idea because they think, well, nobody else is saying it, so it must be a bad idea, it must be a dumb idea, or it must not be the way we do things around here. When in reality, sometimes when we speak up, that's when we get to the best idea.
Right.
Or what I share may be the beginning of what makes you share something, and ultimately we come together with this more collaborative, creative idea.
Right.
So when we create workplaces where people can contribute at that value, it elevates everything about what the team is able to accomplish.
Right. And then after class, that person goes, I'm so glad you asked that question.
Right? Like, I was wondering that the whole time. I ran a program in Connecticut, and we brought in an economics professor from our local university to meet with these classes, and he came in and met with the classes several times over the course of a few years. And he had a story he told about, he taught a class one time, and on the first day of class, the student got lost, and about 6 weeks into the class, he finally asked a question, and everyone in the class acknowledged that they'd been lost since about the first week. But now so it's that idea that had someone just spoken up sooner,
they wouldn't have been lost.
Yeah.
So what does a balanced team look like? Obviously, we want the diversity, we want the different perspectives and all that type of stuff. We know it works, but what exactly does it look like?
So that depends, certainly, on the community that it is working to represent.
So it's representative of where you are. Okay.
It is. And it includes diversity of thought as well.
Okay.
So I talk sometimes. My son was adopted, mm-hmm. and his descent is Hispanic, mm-hmm. but he has very light complexion, mm-hmm. and he's raised in a very white community. Mm-hmm. He doesn't bring a cultural perspective of being Hispanic to anything in his mm-hmm. life. So if somebody were to hire him to check a box for having representation, mm-hmm. they would not get likely the value that would come from somebody who is truly from a different culture and mm-hmm. has that cultural background. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to make sure that a balanced team is not just, well, we have four women and we have somebody who's Asian and we have somebody who's Mexican, actually to be able to say, we have people who come in with different various perspectives, mm-hmm. and whether those are economic or whether those are cultural, mm-hmm. And that they're adding that value to it. The other point that balanced teams is that it has to be something. So there's an interesting statistic, and it's about 45% of men think that if there's one woman on a 10-person team, that women are well represented in an organization.
I wonder about that.
So it's 10%, right? Women are about 45% of men, according to this McKinsey and Leiden study, and 28% of women, right? And so that's an interesting thing, because what we find to be true is if you have one person who's the token representative, mm-hmm. often you get assimilation rather than that full-on contributing of value.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous. You know?
I think that, is that predictably irrational? That mm-hmm. Essentially, it's the assumption that people are ridiculous, right? Like, we don't make sense a lot of the time.
I want to get to something more positive here. More positive. Okay, let's talk about the 10 tiny conversations. I don't want to go through all 10 of them.
Okay.
Because I don't want to steal your thunder.
Yeah.
But maybe one or two that can be examples of what we can use in the workplace.
Okay. So there are two that jump out. I mentioned the business case already. The second one is an acknowledgement and awareness of unconscious bias. Mm-hmm. We all have biases. We all bring them forward. Sometimes you'll hear people say things like, I'm colorblind. I don't think about these things.
Okay.
That's not true. And in fact, if you tell somebody, I'm colorblind, so I don't notice your differences, in some ways you're actually discounting the experiences
completely.
That they've had and what makes them add value. And so one of the areas we talk about is the idea that, yes, everyone does bring an unconscious bias. Be aware of what biases you may have. Mm-hmm. And while you can never stop having a bias, you can introduce different structure that mm-hmm. allows you to sort of overcome that. So if, for example, you know that you have a bias against, like, that you're not likely to think women are natural leaders who can move into an organization, mm-hmm. Perhaps what you do then is when you interview a female for an executive position, mm-hmm. you make sure you have somebody who doesn't share that same bias with you on the interview panel.
Right.
So that they can give that assessment mm-hmm. in a way that is more comprehensive,
mm-hmm.
too.
And that's diversity right there at its best.
The second area that I'm real gung-ho on, another one of the talks, is this idea of metrics. So we started off by talking about the business case. And mm-hmm. you talk about things like, you can get 40% more employee engagement. Everybody wants employee engagement. You can get 38% more profitability if mm-hmm. you have diversity on your mm-hmm. board of directors. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants profitability. And you think about any other business case like that you have in your organization and the goals you would have around it, and you're going to set a target and you're going to talk about that. But mm-hmm. the reality is, so the 10th conversation is this idea of metrics, mm-hmm. where if there's anything else that impacts your business as positively as a diverse and inclusive team does, mm-hmm. you're going to set a goal, you're going to hold people accountable, and you're going to move forward to that.
Right.
But because it's an awkward and uncomfortable conversation, no one wants to set metrics around gender and race at work.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. And so that's a really, there's a, not in the credit union space, but in general, this mm-hmm. is one of the studies that McKinsey has done as well. It's like fewer than 1/3 of organizations that say diversity is an important initiative for mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. will set goals around it. And mm-hmm. so any other business case we have, any other business initiative we have, mm-hmm. we set goals on.
Right,
and so there is some conversation, and I am an advocate and a champion for the idea of saying we are going to set goals on this area and we are going to hold our senior managers accountable mm-hmm. for building increasingly diverse teams. Mm-hmm. So.
And this is stuff I'm sure that you experienced while you were at the league as well, setting up a diverse staff, all that type of stuff. So you're well versed in this.
Yeah.
Even you were at MAPS too.
I was. Yeah.
So same thing there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So
and at MAPS, we had a great opportunity to. MAPS is quite a bit bigger. They have around 200 employees at the time that I was there. And so when we were working toward diversity, we were able to look really deep into organizations. What is interesting to compare that to the Connecticut League, where there's only about, there's, you know, 7 employees on that staff, is it can be really easy to say, oh, it's a small organization, you know, we don't need to focus on diversity, or, but the reality is that small organizations can have diverse teams to the same degree. My team often talked at Connecticut about how we had, you know, we had different cultural backgrounds, we had different genders, we were very balanced with a 7-person team. At MAPS, we worked toward that too. I was always really proud of the fact that our executive team at MAPS was 50-50 male, female. Our board of directors was also 50-50 male, female when I was there. But there was definitely some work we needed to do with cultural understanding and being reflective of that. And I'll give a quick shout out to my friend Victor over at Coopera. MAPS was intentional about it. And we brought in Coopera and worked with them and realized that our desire to serve the membership that we had there needed to be reflective in the staff that we had too. And so it had some great work with them and very intentional about that.
Well, and it just seems like it's a more enriching environment, a more satisfying environment, just because you're getting the different perspectives, you know? I mean, how dull would it be if we all thought the same and looked the same and, oh gosh, fly me to the moon. I love the the different conversations that you can have based on where you come from and what you believe in and all that
and
type of stuff.
And the stuff you can learn, right? Yeah. The ideas of, it kind of, there's that idea that if, like, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, that idea behind it. I think we do similar things like we have... We have RV loans, so let's sell everyone an RV loan. And if you have somebody in there who can say, you know, in the culture I'm from, in the background I'm from, people aren't buying RVs. Right. They don't want an RV loan. Right. They want a, you know, using an example from Victor, like, they want a citizenship loan. They need funding to go through the legal fees for their immigration process.
Right, great example.
So if you want to make money on lending, let's look at the loan products that the different people in our field of membership actually want, not what we have to sell somebody. And that is exactly that point, that when we all have only one frame of reference, we just keep thinking about the same thing.
Right,
and that
right.
chance to open it and broaden it comes with balance.
It's such a siloed, myopic way to look at things. It's just, oh, goodness. All right, we could talk about this all day long.
I know, I told you, give me the wrap it up thing, all right?
Wrap it up, Jill. No, I just want to know why this is, kind of my wrap-up question here is, why is this so important to credit unions today? What... why? I mean, it's an obvious question, but I just enjoy getting your take on
that. Okay, and this is definitely one that I'll try to be concise on. But when I came into credit unions in 2001, what immediately struck me is that I believe credit unions have an opportunity to eradicate global poverty. So just a small thing that we're capable of doing. And that without question, it is our obligation, regardless of what our charter is, to expand the economic capacity of the individuals and the communities we serve. And the only way we can do that is by understanding those communities, and we need the best possible humans in our workplace to be able to help credit unions fulfill that mission. We know that by 2035, the U.S. is going to be a majority-minority population. So we are moving toward a demographic as far as who we can potentially serve that looks very different than the senior-most leadership we have in the industry right now.
Right.
If we don't change so that we can reflect and understand the needs of our community at the most senior level of our leadership, we aren't going to be able to offer the products and services that will make us relevant and that will make us able to actually make that difference of expanding the capacity of our members.
Indeed. I lied. I have one more question.
Okay.
because of how unemployment is right now at an all-time low and trying to find, as like Filene puts it, the war for talent, how do you keep that balance, that diversity, and trying to find the top talent at the same time? That's quite the balancing act.
So one of the things that I have said before is this idea that if we are statistically, as an industry, hiring a lot more white men, one of the best ways we can expand our talent pool is by diversifying it. So if you have not, and I hear this a lot about candidate pools, like we wanted to hire a woman for the position, but we couldn't find any to apply. So if you have an inclusive environment that attracts female leaders to it, you double your candidate pool because you have that opportunity to bring in more just more candidates to look at, to screen, to assess, to identify the right fit for your organization. So you're exactly right. When unemployment is at a record low, that makes it so much more important to be able to look at the entire talent pool that's out there and bring them in and resonate with them. Because it's true that in some cases we aren't seeing women or people of color applying for jobs, but I don't want to work at an organization where if I go online and I look at the leadership team and no one on that leadership team looks like me, I might not feel like that's an organization where I fit.
Good point.
Creating that balance and creating that inclusion, we are more attractive as employers
too. Gotcha. Great message to end on. Jill, again, we could go on for a long time because this is such a hot topic
now. It is.
It should always be a hot topic.
Yeah.
So this is really good stuff. No wonder you started Humanity.
Your
timing is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I realized I probably sat on it for a couple of years and was going into meetings and was talking to people who would say, you know, we can't get diversity on our board, we can't get diversity on our leadership, and I would think, someone should really do something about that. Someone should really, and then I would say, I'm someone.
Yeah.
I'll do something. So light that's where
goes
it came
on.
Out
Love
of.
It.
So,
well, good for you. I'm so happy for all the success already.
Thank you.
So good job. I can't wait to see where you're going to take this because I'm sure it's going to evolve into even bigger and better things. So good stuff. All right, Jill,
thank
you so much. I'll let you get out of here. I know you got a plane to catch.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time.